Felt impossibly big. Oman wasn't a place I dreamed about. Honestly, it was barely a place I thought about at all. Back then, the map felt abstract. Cities and countries, only words with no context. Distance, merely hypothetical. Becoming a ferry pilot changed that. The world shrunk as the process of traveling became routine, and my brain started to compartmentalize each destination as simply the office. Even places I'd never been seemed familiar, just another variation of some other location I'd been to. Somewhere along the way, I got efficient. Plane, terminal, hotel, terminal, lounge, plane, home. Rinse and repeat. No time to take it in or forge new memories, just business. Producing these videos inevitably disrupted that. Carrying a camera forced me to stop moving through places without actually seeing them. It gave me an excuse to step out of this system I've built for myself and to see the places the way I used to, before everything became familiar. Thinking back on a lifetime of globetrotting, the recent memories are the fuzziest. The early days when I had no expectations, they're the ones that stand out. I've learned the moments that last aren't the ones you plan. They're the ones that happen when you don't. So we walk, we look around, and we let places like Muscat, Oman surprise us. The A319 that Pat Lewis and I brought in from Harbin was one of several of these part-out airplanes moving through Muscat. We flew that plane out the following morning, which I'll come back to later. A couple weeks after the 319, I was back on the same route, this time on a 737-700 with Pat Roa. Identical trip with different timing. Because that flight was scheduled over the weekend, we didn't depart until late Sunday night. This allowed us to clear inbound with the UK Border Force first thing Monday morning. Because of this minor change, Pat Roa and I had the entire day in Muscat, with cameras in hand and time to kill. We asked the hotel to find us a driver and told him we wanted to see something interesting. I don't think any of us really knew what that meant yet. The first stop was the Royal Opera House. Beautiful building, and absolutely not why he chose this first stop. We walked the grounds for a few minutes and then realized it was attached to a luxury mall, and I wasn't in the market for a Louis Vuitton or a Patek Philippe, so we moved on. Despite having been here plenty over the years, this was the first time I ever really left the vicinity of the airport.
Walking around Old Muscat here, that's the old palace, down by the Gulf of Oman, like the Arabian Sea, like the mouth of the Arabian Sea. We'll get out to the water here in a bit, but it's really cool.
It was during Ramadan, so the city felt paused, which was probably a strange way to witness it now in retrospect. When we got dropped in Old Muscat, everything slowed down. The lights, the colors, the ocean framed by stone forts. It was way more picturesque than I ever would have expected. We wandered through the palace grounds, climbed up into the fort, and we stood there kind of looking out over the bay just by ourselves. No crowds, no noise, just wind and water and space. I'd have to imagine this was only because of Ramadan. Surely this place gets mobbed with tourists on typical days. I'd estimate that we were there for about an hour, and I was starting to wonder if we'd be able to find somewhere open to eat. I pulled out my phone and started searching, hoping to plan out the rest of the afternoon. As it turned out, we were right around the corner from Mutra Souk, perhaps the most well-known indoor-outdoor market in the city, exactly where I was hoping to end up for lunch. As soon as I crossed the street, I knew that we'd found the spot. This is what I was looking for. Narrow alleys, regular people, sand-colored buildings and storefronts, spice vendors and street food. I could smell it all from a block away, and my stomach began to growl.
Should we walk up here or just walk down the street? What do you want to do?
Oh, I think we're going to go down there.
Oh, yeah.
Any city that still has a pulse, culturally speaking, seems to have one of these. A central market. In Muscat, that's Mutra Souk. Old, dimly lit, a little rough around the edges, and always a little chaotic. In a world dominated by sanitized, high-end, fashion-branded shopping experiences, and yeah, Muscat has plenty of those too, I'll take this every time. These are local businesses, family-owned, probably for generations. I always want to need something that you can only get from a place like this, if you catch my drift. But instead, I usually walk out with a tin of frankincense and a perfect reenactment of the saffron sales pitch that I'll later perform for my wife and teenage sons, who mostly want to know what that smell is coming from my bag.
Frankincense is like rocks.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Turns out saffron mostly comes from Iran. It's just a tiny part of a crocus flower, just 3 strands per flower, all hand-picked. That explains why it costs so much.
Fersky make powder is better. More taste, more color, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
It goes further, too.
Yes. The best quality, put water coming, yellow color, not red.
Okay.
If it's coming red,
too
fake quality.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Because it's a dye.
Yeah.
This
water coming red, fake.
Hmm.
Look, example, this one. This is fake quality, with color, not pure.
Yeah.
Saffron powder.
Right.
Look.
It's supposed to look like pee.
Yeah.
Yes.
Looking at Mutra Souk from above, you'll notice that it's basically a wooden canopy structure above a corridor, lined by little buildings that enclose each shop. Along the corridor, there are circular gazebo-like structures branching off into different corridors and open doorways leading out to town. Pat and I took things outside in search of the street food, which I was starting to worry might not even be there because of the holiday. But when you're wandering around a market like this long enough, the lunch tends to find you.
What do you want to get, man?
Just try some.
Yeah.
What do you recommend? The best?
The 2 pieces, 100 pesos.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know. You have money?
Yeah, I got money.
Sure. Probably just more.
I'm sure that's more than enough.
What was that one?
It's egg.
It's the egg and the egg and the
almond paste.
Yeah.
What is that big fried thing? I want to try that.
It's like a fried sandwich.
Yeah. This one?
Yeah.
You know I couldn't pass up the temptation to try what looked like a deep-fried sandwich, which I still have no idea what it was filled with, but it tasted good.
One little potato front piece.
Whatever the bag would hold, it doesn't matter. The last thing I wanted was remorse over missing out on what could have been.
Hold on, I might have a smaller bill.
Yeah.
This is like 400, like, no cents. Here, the 5 is what I'm gonna.
I briefly looked at the exchange rate when selecting Max Bet at the cash machine earlier. The Omani Real is one of the few world currencies worth more than the US dollar. And three bags of fried goods plus two Cokes only cost one real.
Thank you. All that was $2.60
for everything.
$2.60 for all that.
Soda all.
Perfect. Want to sit down and eat?
Yeah. Hang out with a cat.
Rest assured, the obligatory tourists feeding feral cat scene is never planned. It always just happens naturally. It's like they just know that I'm an easy mark, like my reputation precedes me. Either I have a vibe about me, or cats secretly watch YouTube and spread the word that we always share, because they always just know.
What do you think, Pat?
It's good. It's good stuff, yeah. Like this? Be nice.
I don't know if that's good for
you. Let's see.
Who wants meat?
Oh, really? Drop it. There you go.
Yeah, he doesn't know how to take it.
Yeah.
It's a samosa. Good.
These kitty ones, yeah.
Wants chicken.
Yeah, looks like a bitch the carbs. It's protein.
This is the part of the job people don't always envision. The spaces in between flights. A few hours in a place we may never come back to, wandering markets, eating whatever smells good, and picking up things you don't need, but somehow feel tied to the place you're in. It's never the landmarks that stick with me. It's the ordinary stuff. The streets, the food, the people, the rhythm of a city. Incidental tourism.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Nice to meet you.
Oh, nice to meet you.
With the hunger handled, spices bagged, and data cards full of footage, our time here was coming to a close.
Spices as a tease.
Some really good stuff.
Yeah. We're good. Yeah, we're finished. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Pat Roa and I blasted off later that night and delivered our jet to the UK for part out. Pat Lewis and I, on the other hand, didn't see any of this. We stayed at the hotel and left first thing the next morning.
Just got up and ready. We're at the JW Marriott in Muscat, Oman. Beautiful morning out there. Just about to go get some breakfast. I ate one of these last night. It was super good. No idea what it is. I'm going to get some breakfast with Pat now, and then be on our way.
The food here is good.
That's
funny. Hey, Mouse. Gave me a big goodbye.
Yeah, even most vacation here.
Seems like it.
But this is awesome. Breakfast. Amazing food. Look at this. I already ate those. And what are those things called?
Eggs Benedict?
Oh, yeah. Benedict's. Turkey bacon. It's really excellent. Fruit. Chia pudding.
Poop in a cup.
Yeah, I like the poop in the cup.
No catering needed on the first leg. A solid hotel breakfast had us covered, and there were still a few snacks on board to get us through the flight. It was a sub-5-hour hop across the Saudi desert into Cairo, where we'd gas up for the final leg north to St. Athens. We'd get catered again in Cairo, too, and since this A319 actually had working ovens, we'd be spared the usual cold cardboard Pizza Hut and those little ketchup packets they call a meal. Planning a technical stop in the ferry business is a little different than in the airline world. Geography obviously matters, staying close to the Great Circle route while working around airspace permits and geopolitics. Fuel and handling costs, those are critical. We build a budget and we must live inside of it.
They have some super fancy cars here in Muscat.
I think they think we own the Airbus.
Maybe. They'd be mistaken. And honestly, that Rolls Royce is probably worth a third of what the Airbus is worth.
But after that, it comes down to predictability. We don't have massive dispatch centers or spare crews and recovery plans waiting behind us. When something works, we remember it and we go back. Muscat is one of those places. Fuel is competitive, but handling isn't the cheapest. Maybe that explains the Rolls-Royce airport transfers. But the real reason is simple. Hotel door to airplane stairs in about 20 minutes every time. That kind of consistency is gold in ferry flying. Pat Lewis, our former intern, has been on the bus for almost 2 years now at Nomadic. Earlier this year, we sent him down to Miami to the sim to also qualify on the 737. Flying both Boeing and Airbus at the same time isn't as hard as you'd think, but it does take practice, and this is Pat's first year dealing with that. So I let him handle all the pre-flight programming in the cockpit. We, of course, were in the typical ferry flight configuration, otherwise known as navigation database deferred in accordance with MMEL 3436 Delta. This means Pat would get plenty of practice on the old McDo to get that Boeing stuff out of his head, at least for this week. I headed down to set the fuel load in the totalizer, and the fueler hooked up. V2500-powered A319s can be ordered with various thrust ratings, and by far the most common configuration uses engines rated at 24,000 pounds of thrust. Some operators, however, need the high altitude and hot temperature performance that the more powerful engines bring, and this plane had the big 27K engines. The extra 3,000 pounds of thrust is very noticeable, and the rate of acceleration on the runway really pushes you back into the seat. Thing is a hot rod.
Someone mentioned these engines are not standard V2500s. These things are 27,000 pounds of thrust each, so they're real powerful. And it's definitely noticeable in this airplane. It's so unbelievably powerful light. We were doing like 7,000-8,000 feet a minute with full fuel climbing out of the last leg. It's really something else. By the way, this thing is soft. You've ever wondered.
The entire process of arriving in the morning in a cold, dark airplane to engine start and taxi out only really takes about 45 minutes, even with user fixes to program into the McDo. It's a well-choreographed routine that we repeat thousands of times with either pilot in either role.
It sucks, man. We're going to be building fixes all day.
Busy work.
Yes, sir. Super annoying.
The paperwork, consisting of flight plans, weather, fuel releases, and gen decks, are delivered electronically to the crew using our own purpose-built trip management app, and the hard copies are then forwarded by email to the ground handler for printing. We always need the paper copies, too, as a backup.
Yes, sir. We are going to call for push in just a second, but the brakes are set, and if you haven't already, you can pull docs. All right, what's the QNH?
1070.
Set the QFB default. That's a China thing.
Okay.
So you gotta always. That could be a disaster.
We'd fly two legs today and finish this project up in St. Athen, Wales. The first leg over to Cairo is among the most scenic ferry legs that we regularly operate and involves traversing the Saudi desert before descending over the Red Sea to maneuver over the city of Cairo for landing. I feel like we typically depart Oman at night, and knowing how beautiful the terrain is climbing out of Muscat, I prepared my camera gear for what I'd hoped would be an opportunity to film some epic content on the climb out under clear skies in the morning sun. It was Pat's leg to fly, and I'd just be running the radios, which also meant I'd be able to devote some attention to the filming duties.
Oscar Mike Delta 405, Muscat ground, good morning, pushback and startup is approved facing west on Lima.
Okay, pushback and start is approved, facing west on Lima. The brakes are released and you're clear to push.
The Muscat Airport is big, but for most of the day, it's very quiet. The most I've ever seen is maybe one or two other airplanes taxiing in or out while we're on the move. I assume it's one of those places that's only active for a couple hours at peak times.
Okay, the brakes are set. You are cleared to disconnect. And you can also disconnect the headset. Number one's almost started up here. And we'll look for the pin. And thanks for all your help today.
Goodbye, stand by for my hand signal. Have a safe time.
Bye-bye. Lima Hotel Romeo, Sugar Victor.
Right. And I'm sort of in.
Where are we? This thing doesn't know where I am. Always a good stop in Muscat, man.
Yeah.
I really...
Nice little overnight, nice spot.
Yeah.
Mountains look awesome.
Yeah. Those videos he was showing me of the sand rails, the Jeeps. He has a Xterra. I think it was kicking ass out there.
Really?
Yeah, big tires. They go out and they barbecue.
That's
bring all kinds of food. That's like 20 Jeeps.
That's really cool.
They have winches. Man, I would love to do it. I'd love to come out here one day and reach out to these guys and see if I can.
Before pushback, one of the ramp agents was showing me some pictures and videos of a weekend riding 4x4s and barbecuing meat out in the Omani desert. He invited me to come along sometime, and I definitely want to do it, but not today. We had an airplane to deliver.
Rotate, V2. How's the rate?
We're
good to prepare
the radar.
Already?
Yeah.
What is it? 21-2?
Yeah.
Muscat radar nomadic 405 is with you climbing 2,100 for 3,000.
What's
that
flight?
Alright, present heading to 6,000 feet, nomadic 405.
1 and 2 5 2 descend 4,000 feet. From the mountains of Oman and out across the barren flats of the Saudi desert, the landscape here starts to feel unreal. It's less like flying over Earth and more like watching footage from somewhere else entirely. Mars, maybe. Or maybe a place we haven't been yet. Down there, there's a level of remoteness that's hard to wrap your head around. In a lot of ways, it feels closer to crossing an ocean than flying over land. Thank you. For long-haul pilots, most flights are spent killing time and finding ways to keep focused and alert. Maybe an audiobook or a podcast, a puzzle or a game, or a conversation with the other pilot. But even before cameras, this part of the world demanded my attention through the glass as an observer. An observer of natural beauty and the wonders of our planet that can best be appreciated from miles above looking down. Eventually, the colors start to change. Water comes into view. The emptiness gives way to structure, and you can sense things transitioning from isolation back to civilization. We start down, and the radio chatter fades in to break the peaceful drone of the engines as they roll down to flight idle. The level of activity in the cockpit also increases as we begin to program the arrival sequence and lock down loose items and take our last bathroom breaks before landing.
Can we do 2-2 inshallah, then right in angle 1-2.
Cairo doesn't have published departures and arrivals anymore. ATC sequences all the traffic into and out of the terminal area with radar vectors, which simplifies our job as pilots, but necessitates that we pay strict attention to the radios and quickly execute each command. Descent check. We brief the approach. A visual backed up by the ILS. Expecting radar vectors south of the airport moving east to west, and then expecting a turn to the north, crossing the Nile River, past the pyramids to intercept the localizer to runway 05 center. We're number 2 to the runway with several aircraft behind us. Keep the speed up, they say. 200 or greater until 5 DME. LS on. Auto brakes, min. Localizers tuned and identified. Approach brief complete. Pull heading. We're now on radar vectors. Approach mode, activate. Pull speed.
The only other time I've seen the sun here, aside from when we overnighted.
Alright,
Class 3.
full.
That's full. Let it check. Let it go.
Auto flight coming up. Tell me everything.
Harbin, Calcutta, Muscat, and last but not least, Cairo. The final stop in a four-legger across the planet. It was time for one last walk-around, one last fuel load, one last restock of our catering, and then one last flight for this little 319 before retiring from service forever. I always think about these things in the last leg of a part-out and give a little mental nod to the crews, engineers, mechanics, and support team that kept her flying over the years. I don't know how many passengers she's gotten safely to their destination since she rolled off the assembly line in Toulouse, but I'm sure it's been a lot. Another marvel of engineering reaching the end of the road. Once again, I excused myself and headed out to the ramp for some fresh air while Pat got things started on the McDo. The fuel truck rolled up almost immediately and started pumping. We didn't need too much, top the wings and a few hundred gallons in the center. We certainly didn't want to buy too much extra considering St. Athan was the end of the line, but we still had to have enough reserve on board for contingencies. Fuel planning is a delicate balance. Things don't always go as planned, and having extra gas in the tank when things go sideways is a luxury that all pilots covet. But an A319 burns about 750 gallons of jet fuel per hour, and at $4 a gallon, we also don't want to be wasteful. If the weather is forecast to be good, 45 minutes of reserve fuel is all that's required. Here in Cairo, on trips when we overnight, they park us around the corner by the terminal. When we're just here on a quick turn, they park us at a hard stand in front of the International Charter Terminal. This spot is my favorite because there's usually really good plane spotting, and I am an avgeek. It's a great place to see rare liveries and old jets of yesteryear that still fly around Africa. There's also a lot of Russian metal around, stuff that we normally don't get to see, both civil and military.
How we doing?
I was just gonna build both runways, but I see the only approach is 3-5. You ever get a neutral on 7 or 6?
Man, I haven't been there in probably 5 years, so I don't remember. We'll figure it out. We'll build it if we need to. You can turn off those brake fans. It's loud as hell out there.
Alright, the next is Menku, Mike Echo November, Kilo Uniform. We got North 31. 05.5.
That's a North 31. What?
05.5.
But
East 03. 01.8.
early in the trip when we're fresh, building the user fixes with lat-longs is a one-man job. But on the last leg, when we're tired and hungry, it's best to accomplish this task as a team with one guy reading the coordinates and the other entering the numbers. Then the reader glances down to verify the data. One wrong number or misplaced decimal can lead to a GNE, a gross navigation error, and that's never fun. Truly goes faster this way, too. A real win-win.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
The final step is signing the fuel slip and handling invoice for the services they just performed. I verify the charges and sign it, and then the handler forwards it to our finance team for payment. I pocket the yellow copies for post-trip recon, and we're out.
Food looks like decent, actually. I've never had the hot food here.
I don't think. Maybe. How good you got?
Yes, sir. Just wondered if you were ready. We're going to call for push if you are.
Thank you.
Okay. There's just somebody. We're not clear behind us. I think that. Behind us.
No reverse camera on an airliner. We have no idea what's happening behind us, so we rely on the ground handlers and ramp controllers to tell us when to push. Sometimes this is an endless waiting game. The last leg would be scenic, north across the Mediterranean, Crete, Greece, and up the spine of Italy before chasing the sunset across the French Alps, across the English Channel, and descending in twilight over the British countryside into St. Athens, the end of the road.
That's fine, yeah.
Yes, we'd like to send 0 months and ramp enable on that. That was cleared for push and start.
Okay, sir, brakes are released. You are cleared for push and start. We'll be going to 05 center today.
I'd fly this one, and Pat would run the radios as the non-flying pilot. Flight time, about 4.5 hours. The weather was clear across the entire route, and both of us were ready to put this one to bed and be done with it. Our sequence was number 3 for departure behind two working A320s, both also bound for Western Europe. Our fuel load was light, and since we were also flying an overpowered empty A319, we'd outperform everyone anyway. The goal was to climb to 38,000 feet as quick as possible to avoid having to slow down for the heavier, slower aircraft departing on the route in front of us. It shouldn't be a problem, and we should be able to reach cruise within the first 15 minutes, ideally before we even cross the coastline at Alexandria.
Coming, this is 405, so on the way you do, climb into 6. After departure, left at 8 TV, climb, flat level 6, it is okay, perfect.
Pickup 05 center, after
pickup
30, 35.
Ready?
Good.
Come on, right engine.
35. 80.
Okay.
What's up?
1-0.
Left 330, contact 1-1-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-5-0-
As I expected, we outclimbed everyone, and as soon as we reached top of climb, it was time once again to eat. We hadn't had much of anything since breakfast, so I popped our meals into the oven and then set up the cockpit buffet. An eclectic mix of below-average choices warmed in our convection oven, still fragrant from the Indian food we ate the day before.
This is from Cairo. Actually, this is some of the best Cairo catering I've got. We never have ovens, so I always get sandwiches, as you all know. The sandwiches there are horrendous. So I always thought all the catering was bad, but we have ovens this time. We got this. Check this out. That's spaghetti bolognese. It's not too bad. I got the tandoori chicken. It's just on an Indian kick. And I also got Mexican beef strips with french fries.
As I said, eclectic. I didn't know what was going to be edible, so I got a little bit of everything.
So I've already had some of this. It's... You can't really screw bolognese up too bad.
It needs to be convenient. What would you like?
He's trying to pay half of the
problem.
Yeah, right. Eric. The fries are good. Haven't tried that beef yet.
My pants, and my shoes.
Huh. Right. Four,
five. I get a real 1, 2, 3, 7, 5.
What is it
to? 3, 2, 1, 3, 7, 5. 5, 2, 3, 3, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5,
but not through the middle.
It's got an exoskeleton, is what you're saying?
A lot of good scenery on this trip.
French Alps? Oh yeah, look out your side.
Alright man,
this is the final hour of this long ass journey, you know? It's been a long one. We're finally over, southern France at this point?
Finally.
This is like, I've never seen this level of seat malfunction. Dude, this airplane is like, it's done. It's given up. I can't live without this armrest. This is extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah, looks like it.
That's the inner workings. It's like an MD-80 window.
Any Airbus pilot will tell you, the armrests are essential on this thing. The jet was designed to be flown from a specific position, and if you lack arm support, it really sucks. The left one more than the right, but regardless, I'm glad it at least waited till the last leg to fall apart.
What do you want me to do?
I just wanted to talk about it at the end of the finale
here. It's the end of the armrest.
Damn it! It's totally screwed.
As the sun started to set, we briefed up the approach into St. Athen and transitioned to ATC that spoke English natively. Facing west, we'd be able to take advantage of the last remaining light as the darkness enveloped our position from behind.
No, you have to be careful about this. Another runway, like, within, like, 5 miles.
Yeah, to be in front of airport.
Yeah.
He's gonna be right in front of us when we turn off.
I got so much shit to put away.
It's fishy.
You know, it's the part I dread. The last taxi road. South Bay.
We're talking 172. I got South Jersey region's like half of this.
Yeah.
Like many places we deliver to, St. Athen wasn't really built for modern jet airliners. And though the runway's plenty long, the taxiways are narrow with very tight turns designed for much smaller aircraft. I've flown 767s in here in the past, and the 319 isn't very big, but it sits high, and maneuvering it around requires some finesse to keep all six tires on the pavement.
I can't see the marshals, but the
light. Right in front of us. I can't see him now because I lost him to the fucking dust.
Yeah. There he is.
But yeah, right by the left of the way. My belt is long, so there he is.
We parked the airplane for the last time and started the slow ritual of cleaning up after ourselves, making sure no mic, no camera, and no iPad got left behind. 7,500 miles behind us, and that's not even counting the flight to Harbin. One more leg as a passenger, and another full circle around the planet would be complete. China to Europe these days is starting to feel as normal as China to the States, and honestly, I'm here for it. I didn't get into this business to fly around familiar skies. I got into it for the adventure, for the long days and longer nights, and for the experiences that only exist out here. Because even when the routes repeat, no two trips are ever the same. Every mission has its own rhythm and its own challenges. Sometimes the whole trip feels different just because the person sitting next to you. Sometimes it flies by, and sometimes you're ready for it to end.
Now we're just waiting for a car.
Traveling the world with guys like Bob, Pat Lewis, Pat Roa, Wes, or really anyone who's regular and nomadic is always a pleasure. Flying a trip with friends makes even the harshest conditions feel manageable, and that's a good thing, because Pat and I still had 3 hours in a taxi, and then 7 hours on a United 767 in front of us. We'd get a few hours in a hotel near Heathrow to wash up, change, and take a little nap before heading home. I can never sleep anyway, right after a long one, but the second I recline the seat on the flight home, forget about it. It's like a time warp. And in a flash, the whole ordeal feels like a lifetime ago. Within a week, I'm ready to go do it again.